This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Mark Cash Morning Show, where we have the most educated listeners in town. I'm just telling you that. We were talking earlier about this drone situation in New Jersey. And I'm like, I know that our Navy has the technological advantage of being able to shoot anything out of the sky. Well, Aegis is just one of their many systems that they have on these ships. And obviously somebody here with some intimate knowledge of that said, yes, indeed, they could shoot it down anything they want to. They could absolutely track and destroy these drones if they wanted to. And also the guy, an admiral, Wayne Meyer, who developed that weapon system was from Brunswick, Missouri. So I had no idea. That's been around for a while, but I'm just saying it's a very effective, very deadly tool if they wanted to get rid of some drones for sure. If you're just joining us in the last few minutes, the Time has leaked out the information officially that Trump is the man of the year. Person of the year, I guess, is what they call it now, right? They had changed that a while back.
Person of the year, right.
Person of the year. And he will be ringing the bell at the New York Stock Exchange this morning. I actually got to do that one time. It was pretty cool to
be
in there.
That is cool.
Yeah. Was with a group from veterans who were up there doing that, and I traveled up to New York with them and got to do that.
So did I hear, cool, though, that this is the first time Trump's ever done that?
I think it's the first time Trump's done it. They've had presidents up there before, but that's pretty cool. So that's now official, in case you are just tuning in. Carl, are we having some audio problems on one of the feeds this morning?
Yes.
Okay.
You can, right. Once again, you and Kim can be seen. I am not on there, and my camera is the one that feeds the audio.
Okay, so you can read our lips if you're on the socials for right now. We will we'll get that fixed for you. Of course, still working on the Odyssey app. You can take us anywhere, or the radio, or the podcast. If you want to download that at 971talk.com or wherever you get your podcasts, we put every segment up there for you for sure. Coming up, we got former Senator Jim Talent anxious to get his take on the drone situation, because of course Jim is very studied in the defense area, and I'd love to get his thoughts on. So if it's true what Congressman Van Drew said, that these drones are linked to the Iranians somehow, why in the world are we allowing this to continue? I mean, that's what Van Drew said, taking him at his word. I'll find out what Jim Talent thinks about it. The bottom of the hour, everybody knows the name Ed Martin. If they had any connection to the Tea Party here back in the day, or the Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, he's been involved for years and years in conservative politics. He was chief of staff to Matt Blunt years ago here in Missouri, and he's since moved, but still has a lot of connections to the St. Louis area, obviously. And he's just been named to the Office of Management and Budget for the incoming Trump administration. We're going to talk to him about that role. He'll be chief of staff up there, and he's going to join me here at the bottom of the hour at about 7:35. So we will get to that for you. But first, let's get to our top stories here, Carl.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
There's certainly been a lack of transparency over the past 4 years. If you talk to reporters off the record, they will tell you they are excited that President Trump will be back in the Oval Office because they know how much access they had to him and his press secretaries in his term.
Well, yeah, Caroline Leavitt on Fox and Friends this morning she will be the new press secretary, right? She's like, how refreshing it's going to be. A lot of reporters come up to me and said, wow, we're actually going to get to ask questions to the president in the White House press briefing room, and the press secretary won't need to refer to a book in front of her to give you answers to questions. It will be refreshing.
They remember how the emails were such a big issue in 2016? Yeah. Trump's State Department found that Hillary sent and received exactly zero classified emails.
Secretary Clinton said, I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
Now, there was classified material emailed.
Thank you. That was James Comey, former director of the FBI. How about that? Bill Clinton is on an apology tour for Hillary Clinton. Is he trying to get her a preemptive pardon? What's going on here? I don't understand.
But I want you to know that I am and always will be a proud feminist. You will always have an ally in me and in my government.
Just out of interest, if you're walking down the street and you find Justin Trudeau's man card, call me and we'll try to ship it back to him. I have no idea why this guy is an apologist for being a man, but he walks around with that guilt emanating from him.
It kind of feels like we have this conversation every 10 years in St. Louis. State Rep Ian Mackey says his 35-page proposal is really just the Better Together plan, verbatim, from 6 years ago.
Oh, say it isn't so. Please say it isn't so. Carl, can you hit the no merger minute for me here just to remind people where we stand on this particular
issue? This is your no merger minute.
Thank you.
That's sick. Those are corrupt bastards, Chris.
You need to get your head out of your butt, focus on the real issues.
To pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
How about no?
Yeah. How about no? Does anybody know Ian Mackey? You should go check on him and see if he's got a pulse. He's a Democrat, apparently from Richmond Heights. Never met the guy, but I don't really know that I need to. He's basically he's rolled out in the form of a bill that'll be introduced when the new session takes place. The Better Together plan, the one that failed miserably at the hands of the people that tried to roll it out last time, and he's not changing anything. He wants the city and the county to merge. He wants to bail out the city for 60 years of horrible liberal progressive ideas that have driven people fleeing to the suburbs by combining the two and making the county take over all of the debt and all the other problems that the city has engendered. The higher taxes, the earnings tax. I mean, what a complete nightmare that would be. It was rejected soundly 4 years ago, and the media is having a great time playing this thing up again. And I don't know what they get out of it, because I truly believe, and I haven't spoken to anybody about this yet, because really the story just broke yesterday when somebody realized he rolled this bill out. I don't know any Republican down there in Jeff City. There may be a few who would actually get on board with something like this. But the biggest failure of it is it once again asks for a statewide vote. Instead of realizing that one of the flaws in this thing to begin with is that they tried to go for a statewide vote because they knew that's the only way, the proponents knew that's the only way it would ever pass. Because they knew that if it was a local vote, just the city separately and then the county separately, that it wouldn't pass.
I imagine far more people in the city would be in favor of this merger compared to the county, because the city is the clear drain on all the resources because they're failing under the leadership of Tashara Jones. It's a mess. And why would the county want to take the city in and basically that mess into theirs?
And they tried to make excuses for it last time that, well, you know, they wouldn't, they would maybe phase out the earnings tax over a period of time in the city if this happened. And, well, of course they would. They're cash starved, so to speak. Now, not from the standpoint that they're handing out ARPA money, like you get $100,000, you get $100,000, you get $30 million for neighborhoods and all this other garbage that has nothing to do with the crime rate in the city. They don't spend a dime on public safety, but they want to merge the city police with the county police to save resources, which means officers in the county that now get to patrol, you know, some neighborhood out in Wildwood would suddenly find themselves assigned to one of the districts downtown or something.
And how many of those officers would not want to do that then?
Right, when they have a shortage, right, which they currently have. They're down 300 officers. Mm-hmm. So they're often these things. They need to fix their own house before they try to merge all those problems and just have them erased by the fatter wallets of the people living out in the county. That's really what this has always been about. I don't think it'll ever happen. All right, when we come back, we'll get to former Senator Jim Talent in just a couple minutes. Want to get his thoughts on the real potential for some sort of a terrorist threat from these huge drones that are flying up around New Jersey and the Upper East Coast. What in the world is going on? We'll get to that in just a minute.
Iran launched a mothership probably about a month ago that contains these drones. That mothership is off. I'm going to tell you the deal. It's off the east coast of the United States of America. They've launched drones. Is everything that we can see or hear. And again, these are from high sources. I don't say this lightly. Now, you know, we know there was a probability it could have been our own government. We know it's not our own government because they would have let us know. It could have been some really glorified hobbyist or hobbyists that were doing something unbelievable. They don't have the technology.
All right, we've got former Senator Jim Talent with us on this Thursday morning. Jim, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Hope you guys are well?
Yeah, we're doing great. That was Congressman Jeff Van Drew yesterday claiming that he's been told that whatever these drones are up on the East Coast are of Iranian making and that they've got a mothership just out in international waters somewhere. Do you know anything about it, or do you have any opinions on why we're allowing this to continue?
Well, I mean, it's the first I've heard of that explanation. I would be skeptical that Iran has naval forces that are that expeditionary. But if the congressman's been read into this, in other words, if he's been briefed on it, it's something I would definitely want to follow up on. But you have asked me a question on which I am pretty much a blank slate, so I'm curious. And by next Thursday, I will have an answer for you, before.
I'm just thinking, I mean, I'm sort of comparing this to the Chinese spy balloon. We let that thing float over two-thirds of the United States before we shot it down. Why would we not want to at least capture one of these to try to figure out its origin if it's really trailing Coast Guard cutters and flying over, you know, sensitive areas along the East Coast? Somebody needs to be. It sounds like we just have a void of leadership right now in D.C.
There's no question that that's true. And to an extent I've never seen before. Now, I would say void of leadership, except President Trump is filling it pretty well, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's conducting foreign policy, which is indicative of the fact that he knows what he wants to do. It's really remarkable. We're going to see a lot of action beginning day one. We're seeing it right now. I'm much more concerned about Chinese capabilities. And if the congressman had said it's a Chinese operation, I would have said, yeah, I mean, I could really believe that because they have considerable intelligence and reconnaissance capabilities to include balloons and drones and their own satellite system. And we do have to be on guard against that. I mean, they are a peer competitor militarily. And the pacing threat, the threat against which the Pentagon has to plan and against which the new Secretary of Defense will plan once he gets confirmed.
I wanted to ask about these supposed preemptive pardons that Joe Biden could give. Obviously, he already gave his son Hunter an 11-year pardon, which is insane. What do you think he would actually do this for some of these folks, these preemptive pardons? I mean, what kind of precedent in your mind does that set?
Yeah, this is what he did to Hunter is virtually unprecedented. Now, President Ford gave a similar kind of pardon, although not going back as far. To Richard Nixon, that was much more defensible. I mean, Nixon was a former president, and I actually think Ford did the right thing. It might have cost him the 76 election, but he wanted to get past Watergate. I mean, I think that was a statesmanlike action, and nobody thought he was doing that to protect himself. See, that's the problem here, is Hunter's not the only one who's benefited from his activities. A lot of people in the Biden family have, and one of the problems they've got, and you guys have talked about this, is because Hunter has now been pardoned, he has no Fifth Amendment privilege not to testify in any federal inquiry, you know, based on the fact that he may have committed federal crimes. So the new Justice Department, they call a grand jury to investigate, which would be very justified, Hunter's activities with a view towards looking at money laundering, foreign influencers, a whole host of felonies that may have been committed and from which other parts of the Biden family may have approved of. So that's why they're thinking about this. It would be an incredible overreach, but so was the Hunter pardon. So, no, I wouldn't be surprised to see it, Jim.
Yeah, interesting. You know, Jim, I got about a minute left here, but I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the Hegseth nomination. Clearly, he met with Murkowski and Susan Collins yesterday. Joni Ernst has said she'll give him a chance. What would you base his odds at this point?
I'd say they're better than 50-50. And, you know, Hegseth, first of all, he's doing the right thing. He's earning this, which he needed to do. He's explaining these personal attacks on him. And I think he said, look, there was a time in my life when, you know, I did some things I'm not proud of now. I haven't been doing them. I never did the things that they've accused him of, like coercing women and that sort of thing. So he has to deal with that. And then at the hearing, he has to show that despite the fact he has no experience, quote unquote, in the building, is what they call it, in the Pentagon, that he can run the Pentagon. I think he's going to do it. And I think if he has a good hearing, he's a good communicator, he has energy, he's a patriot. And I think there's a lot. If I were there, I would want to vote for him.
Good.
I think there's a lot to be said for bringing in a disruptor, somebody who's not attached to the culture of the Pentagon and therefore would be able to change it. So I would bet he gets confirmed.
Should be a good one. Jim Talent, thank you.
Okay, guys.
Yep, have a good week. We appreciate you. We're going to be back in just a minute. We'll talk to Ed Martin, who's about to join the Trump administration. No one well, if you missed the breaking news this morning, Donald Trump has been named Person of the Year, and they tweeted that out earlier, and just as he gets to go up and open up and ring the bell on Wall Street today, that news came out. I'm not sure there was really another choice. Maybe Elon Musk? I don't know. But Donald Trump once again shaking up the establishment in Washington, D.C., and one of the people that will be helping him do that is Ed Martin, St. Louisan, longtime activist here, Tea Party member, all that great stuff, Phyllis Schlafly's Eagles, and we've got him on the phone this morning. Ed, good morning to you.
Hey, Mark, great to be with you. Friend of Mark Cox, too, friend of Mark Cox. Don't forget, long before either of us were doing much, we've been friends, so I appreciate you and your great listeners. So glad to be with you. Yeah, look, it's great. It's a great time. It's a great time to be thinking about the future of America in so many ways. And I'm excited to be a part of President Trump's administration.
So you'll be chief of staff for the Office of Management and Budget. And if there's any organization that incoming that should be able to hit the ground running, I would think it would be that one because Russ Vogt, who'll be the head of it, ran it before, right?
Yeah, so you're exactly right. Two things, Mark, two observations. One, OMB, for people that don't know, unfortunately, our federal government has gotten so darn big and has so much money and power that as it's grown, you have to have sort of an operations center, you know, and that's OMB. It runs the budget, it runs personnel, it runs the implementation of the budget, which is to say all the spending. So it's kind of like in the old days, Mark, you'll know the term, you and I are old enough, they called it a boiler room. It's where kind of that all the action was. It got ops center for the kids that are playing video games and need to think of it that way. But the second thing you point out is at the end of Trump's first term, there was a guy named Russ Vogt who had spent a decade in the conservative trenches of the Congress as a staff guy, and he became the director of OMB. He has a great rapport with President Trump. When they did the budget in the last 2 years of that term, they used to huddle together, the two of them, and the president would have these questions and priorities, and they worked together great. Russ has had 4 years in the wilderness, like Donald Trump, to think about what it's like to come back in and get ready. And my goodness, the guy's ready, and President Trump is ready. And look, all that would be the most amazing thing ever, Mark. And to be a part of that, I'm thrilled. And now add on this. Elon Musk and Vivek, when they started to look at how they could actually make change, not just talk, they realized there was only one place, and that was OMB, Office of Management and Budget, where I'm working. And they said, so I'm meeting today with one of the senior Elon guys about some of their priorities, because those guys are like, hey, we can either pass legislation as Mark, as you and your listeners know, that often takes forever and gets watered down and screwed up and all. Or we end, and they probably do some of that, but the those reforms are going to say, hey, if we want to cut regulation, OMB does that. If we want to cut budgets, OMB holds budgets. It's called impoundment, and on and on and on. So it's an exciting place to be right now. And it's going to be great, fun, and good for the country.
That was kind of my question, because as part of DOGE, Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk they don't have any power other than to, you know, go to members of Congress, or you in this case, to say, hey, this is what I think we need to be cutting. So you would probably be working very closely with them, right?
Yeah, and more. Let me say it more this way. President Trump has laid out, and both Russ Vogt and I were on the platform committee in the fall, at the convention, and the president himself, I'm looking at the platform right now, he wrote the thing. We drafted it, we got lots of input, but especially as to what's the 20 promises at the beginning, he wrote them. He was on the phone writing them. And here's my point. He won the election, and he has said to us, I want DOGE to succeed. I want America to succeed. So when I agree with you, DOGE doesn't practically have any power, but it has the power of this president saying, I want them to succeed. And here's what I tell people. If you give me Elon Musk's PR / political cover, is how I think of it, I can take on the world. Because most of the time you go and try to take on something in government, and there's all kinds of I can think of one office, a small office in the White House, that has a constituency that includes about 5 senators and one of the major, major American companies. So when you say cut that there, if you don't have Elon Doge cover, flying cover over us saying, why do we spend $5 million a year for an office that does nothing? And now he's our cover, and he's willing to do that, right? So he's interested. Now, also, he's going to do some systematic things and really look at some regulatory burdens and other things. And then we, OMB, have the ability. We do all the regulations and therefore deregulation. So you can't pass a reg and you can't dereg without going through OMB. And so I can tell you, we're deregging, and we're going to find lots of ways to do it. And that's, look, Vivek and Elon are so successful because they're smart, and not just loud smart. They're smart, clever. They figured out within about 2 weeks OMB was where they could get the bang for the buck. Yeah. And so I'm going over today to Elon's number two. We're working hand in glove on coming up with things that can make the government more efficient and make the country better.
That's great. We're talking to Ed Martin. He's going to be the new chief of staff at the Office of Management and Budget. And, you know, Ed, I'm thinking back to 2016. And one thing I remember specifically was that rally Donald Trump had here in St. Louis, over here at the Kiel. And on stage, who walked out as part of the introduction for Donald Trump but the grand lady, Phyllis Schlafly? And I know you were there with her that day.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump remembers that. And when you think of what he's gone through since then up until now, what a great American story.
Yeah, Phyllis, that was the first time she met him in person. They had talked on the phone 3 or 4 times before, but that was the first time in the back of the Kiel Opera House, as you mentioned, downtown St. Louis. They met in a little side room. It was the three of us, actually, and it was extraordinary. But the funniest line on that is, as we were getting ready to go out on the stage, we were walking together, and Phyllis was, only 6 months from her death, and she was pretty frail. And President Trump was on the right of her, and I was on the left, and we were walking together, and she was holding on to both of us, our arms. And I said, because we were going to go out on the stage, and he was going to be exposed to the way the stage was open, and he wasn't going to come out. He was going to come out later. I said, do you want to switch sides, sir? And he said with a big smile, no, I'll stay on Phyllis's right. And Phyllis looked up at him and laughed, and she said, something like, you wish, or something like that. And so, look, she believed in him as a candidate. I wrote about this yesterday. But then people thought, oh, she said he can win. You got to win first. But she also knew something after 92 years about the quality of people. And she thought he loves this country. She used to say that. She said he just loves America so much, he's going to do what it takes. And on major issues, he knew, she believed that he was right on immigration, on trade and things that were big. But she just knew, like her, they just loved the country. And it was great. It was great. Great to see them together. And by the way, another thing, quick thing, Mark, at the convention in Cleveland, he gave his speech, and Phyllis was in a wheelchair by then, sat in one of the rows. And the place is big, but it's not that big. But she's one of the only people on the floor in a wheelchair. And Donald Trump looked right at her during one of the parts of the speech, eye to eye, looking at her from the stage as he spoke. And when I got back, I said, was he looking at you? And she said, oh, yeah, he was looking right at me. And they had this. So he, as you mentioned, every time I see him, he brings up Phyllis. He says, wow. And he says to people around him, Phyllis believed in me early. Phyllis believed in me early.
We miss her voice so much, Ed, and I just can't. The number of times I had her on my show, I treasure those. I replay them from time to time. Moving forward here, when you look at the totality of the people Donald Trump has tapped to lead this administration, First of all, it's amazing he's put together this team this quickly, but you really get the impression that on day one, they're ready to start enacting some serious change. Can you expect that?
Yeah, look, I mean, I can tell you that there's, I don't think it's a secret. I don't know if it's been talked about, but I think every administration likely did this. There's a team that's talking about day one. I mean, there's a team of senior staffers who are planning day one and the first week and all. But I think it's something else too. By having this 4-year break, which nobody wanted and didn't think was right, we've had a chance to think about and see what has to be done. So there is a great sense. Also, there's a sense of urgency. I mean, the president has said to us, he's not running for re-election. There's nothing in the future. He wants to just do what's best and what's right and do it. But there's also a sense of urgency that we know we're going to be facing opposition from the media, opposition from the left, sometimes opposition from our own party. So we've got a sense of urgency about it. But yeah, no, look, you're going to see. I mean, already the guy is sort of leading the world, and we haven't even gotten inside the Oval Office. So look, what I tell my team as we're preparing is you can wait around, Mark. You know this from professionally. You can wait around and try to hit a grand slam on the bottom of the ninth, but that takes a long time to get there. Hit a single today, right? Hit a single today. Hit two singles today. Maybe a double tomorrow, but just keep hitting singles and let's put some things on the board. And I think you're going to see a lot of that. Bobby Kennedy's got a team that's thinking the same way. We're gonna see some things that I think are going to give people a lot of confidence that America is, headed in the right direction. And we'll make some mistakes, but we're going to be trying really hard to make things better. And I think we will.
Can't wait, Ed Martin. Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you, Mark. You're a good friend to me and good encouragement. So thanks. And anytime I can come on and help, I love what you're doing and support you and your program.
We'll do it again soon, Ed. Thank you.
All right, Mark. God bless.
Take care of yourself. Merry Christmas to you. We appreciate getting him on here this morning and lots of enthusiasm. And clearly that could be ground central for Doge.
Oh, yeah.
As he's describing it there. I heard nobody mention that before. So I think that's great and little insight you may not get somewhere else. Good for him. Coming up, Kim, what are we whimming about today?
Well, we were just talking to Ed Martin about overhauling parts of the federal government. Maybe that could be the U.S. Postal Service. It's been kind of a mess.
Yes.
Wait until you see what happened at a congressional hearing when the postmaster gave himself an A grade for his tenure.
Yeah, we'll get to that coming up next.
Kim on a whim.
All right, raise your hand if you think the U.S. Postal Service does a good job. I'm going to wait. No, none of you?
Here's the deal. I've got some individual postal carriers I've gotten to know who I think work their butts off every day. But as an overall postal service, I've lost a lot of confidence in them the last 10 years, let's say.
And I think a lot of people would agree with you, Mark. It really speaks to poor management of USPS, and that would go to Postmaster Louis DeJoy, okay?
Trump appointed him,
but I would not be shocked if he was out very soon. This guy was brought into a House Oversight Committee hearing to talk about the poor performance he's had leading this agency. And you have to hear this conversation because I guess he was asked what he would grade himself for his performance, and he said A, and this congressman out of Georgia was not having it. Listen to this exchange.
You were graded by the United States people, and they don't use your service anymore. You bankrupt.
That is not true.
You
that
bankrupt this true, through, your
this
through your reputation only. Through your reputation, you are responsible for the fall of the Postal Service and the lack of accountability.
This Congress is responsible for the fall of the Postal Service.
So it's Congress.
I am trying to fix
on your
Postal
watch,
Service.
With all the AI.
Before my watch, the same stuff happened.
With all the AI, with all the computer systems, you're worse than if I took
you're
a horse
to yourself,
and picked up the mail and delivered it 2 miles down the road. That's you. I hope you got that on camera. This is the response that the postmaster just gave Congress when he doesn't like what he hears. Literally covered his ears and gave himself the grade of A. And with that, sir, I rest.
Covered his ears like a 5-year-old.
Yeah, like I'm not going
to listen to what his
anymore.
Or her parents are saying. La 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 la. La, la.
Yeah, that's what I envision.
I love that the congressman. This is Rich McCormick, by the way, out of Georgia, called him out on it. How ridiculous. There's truth in what he's saying, by the way, to the whole bankrupting thing. Listen to this. The United States Postal Service lost nearly $10 billion in 2024. The estimated loss for USPS next year is about $6.5 billion.
Oh, my gosh.
And he's going to go on and blame Congress for that. Maybe there is a component to that where there were roadblocks or I don't know. But when you have that big of an issue, I'm sorry, you have to look at management. That's poor management.
Yeah, I don't know how you get away from that, right? Like Metro here locally. Let's just as an example, an analogy. The people that wanted a transit system in St. Louis, just like Metro buses or Metro trains, always knew it was never going to operate on its own budget. It would never make enough money to support itself. It was always going to be a drain on resources, but they saw it as a necessary evil to try to get people from point A to point B that didn't have a car. If you live downtown and you work in Chesterfield, you got to be able to get out there somewhere, so they provide busing for it. The Postal Service has at one point supported itself, but as it's grown to cover the entire United States, it reached a point where it was never going to generate enough money to pay for all of those services. Even when stamps went from, 5 cents a piece to what are they now? 75? I don't even know what the price of a stamp.
Say forever on them.
Yeah, I buy forever stamps.
See,
I don't pay a lot of attention to what the individual. They used to say the price on them, but they got away from that.
Even go to the post office to buy them. You can get them at Costco. You can get them at a lot of places.
Right.
So
you don't
there's very little reason for you to actually have to go there unless you're wanting to ship something specifically where you need to go in. What I find interesting, too, is the dates that they give as deadlines to get your mail out to arrive in time for Christmas. It looks like it's changed because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like for years it used to be December 20th, and now I'm seeing that most of them are the 18th. Priority Mail, it looks like, is going to be the 19th. Priority Mail Express service is December 21st. But maybe those are little things that people tend to not notice where service is just getting slower.
Well, I just checked. It's 73 cents for first class stamp now. But it still says forever on it. I mean, so they can raise it again next week to 75. And maybe they do, but I think people are paying their bills electronically. I don't think as many people are relying on it. And therefore, maybe they do need to streamline it in some cases.
A lot of companies, Amazon, Walmart uses FedEx. They're not using USPS.
Wait till Elon Musk and Vivek get their hands on that operation.
Hey, Postmaster DeJoy, you might want to pack your bags.
Yeah, you and Chris Ray can take the same train right out of town, my friend. You're gone. Out of here. Coming up, our buddy Griff Jenkins. We'll get to the Griffer at about 8:35 and figure out what he's got going. Maybe he's tracking drones this morning. What do you think? We'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.